Hi, President Senator Paul, that's
Actually, our papers and slides available, so you can just look at yourself later, so don't bother trying to copy everything. The paper about which I'm going to speak is this one, Differential Arcs and Ego Types, together with Rahimus and Alan Freud, and you can find it on my webpage. And the slides that I'm presenting right now are also there on the webpage, so you can just print those and download to yourself and read them. You might also want to look at the original papers about on which it's all based. You can find these on Alan's webpage. Okay, so the main paper, this last one, the second last one, the Jet Space Varieties, Martin Ziegler was supposed to be here and talk to us all about this topic. Technically, he spent 2 hours talking about it, but he came down with an illness and couldn't make it down. So I'll try to give his talk in half of the time I was planning to give my own talk. Okay, so let's see. We're dealing with differential fields, and I'll just remind everyone, and I'm sure that many of you already know this, but just remind you what I mean by a differential field. So a differential field is a field given together with a derivation. So a derivation is an operator which looks like taking a derivative. And so it's additive, c of x plus y is c of x plus d of y, and it satisfies the Leibniz rule. C of x times y is x dy plus y dx. Now the theory of differential fields is a nice universal theory. Like it's a universal field, an inverse function. So at least it's a nice theory at least. And you can express it even with many derivations at the end of them. And you can even ask the derivations commute. And I'm going to ask that they commute. I know that some people here don't want to assume that. So if you want, you can just assume that they generate a finite dimensional V-alpha. And that's fine. It's a very nice theory, which I'll call for the commutation dx0 in for differential fields of characteristic 0 within commuting derivations. It's not a model completion. Differentially closed fields within derivations, characteristic 0. Now, the theory of differentially closed fields is known to be particularly nice, and it has an awful lot of nice properties still theoretically, theoretic-wise. The first one is that you can actually compute the Morley rank and the mu rank of the generic type, and it's omega to the n, right, for n is the number of derivations. And so it's a totally transcendental theory in which we have a whole slew of ranks, stability theoretic ranks floating around, as well as algebraic ranks. So there are ranks that are associated just to the differential algebra, which have some relation to the monotonic ranks, but they aren't exactly the same. And this will actually, in the end, pose some problems to us in pushing the technology of jet spaces to the general differentially closed field context. And I said it's a stable theory, a totally transcendental theory, so forking means something in this world. But it means something algebraic. So the two field elements from the differential closed field is free from some other field, differential field L over a common over a subfield little k. If, well, basically there are no new equations, differential equations satisfied by the tuple using differential equations over L, except those that already came from K. But the way that we formalize this is by thinking that the ideal of differential polynomials, say in the variables x1 up through xn, over L, which vanish at it. I call that the ideal of A over L. And if it's free, if A is free from L over K, then this ideal is generated by the ideal defined over K. That is, you can actually find the system of generators this ideal where the coefficients come from K. Mm-hmm. You're shaking your head this way yourself.
Other
reasons, just so nice. I'll choose to believe you. Now, the notion of canonical base, also a nice interpretation, algebraic interpretation in this world. The canonical base of the type is just the field of definition of the ideal. Okay. Again, something which comes just out of algebra.
And finally, I just want to talk about a special kind of definable set. And if you take, let's just start with the case where you just take some of the derivations. You take none of the specified derivations, and you look at the kernel. All the elements in U were, say, dnm of x equals 0. That defines a field. Well, you can take the intersection with another one of these spaces, of the constants for some derivation. Again, that's a field. In fact, you can take linear combinations of the derivations and have formed again another derivation, the kernel of the field. So you can see what the rank of that field is. And the rank of the field is essentially omega to the codimension of the vector space bound by the derivations for your x for the maximum to vanish. So again, and in fact, this field itself has the structure of a differentially closed field, but with respect to a small number of derivations. And so it's a nice field, just what we're looking at. All right, so these are some particularly nice definable sets. Of course, there are horrible definable sets. And some of our goal is to understand the horrible definable sets in terms of the nice ones. And the nice ones are actually the horrible ones, once you get around to thinking about it. Because in some sense, this is where all the geometry happens. All of the geometry should be happening in the fields, given by the structure, given by the geometry of algebraically closed fields, or the lower rank differential fields.
Okay.
So this is a vector space. Okay. So this is the basis. Okay. So I take the d1 to dn as a basis for vector space over here. Now, it's been known for some time that the minimal sets, definable and differentially closed fields, satisfy the silver trichotomy, that they have this particularly nice structure theory. So formally, I guess the theorem was originally proven just in the case of a single derivation, although the proof goes through in some other cases. And says that you take a definable set inside of differentially closed fields, which happens to be strongly minimal, then either the geometry, the working geometry on it, is locally modular, or there's a finite correspondence between x and the constants, between the fields. So the complicated working geometry on x is explained by the complicated geometry of the field, the constants. And the original proof went by showing that one can regard this strongly null set x as being as risky geometry, possibly after throwing away a few things and doing a little bit of work. But doing a little bit of alpha then shows that this x can be regarded as risky geometry. And then you apply the big theorem about the structure of the risky geometries to see that there has to be a field which is infinitely connected to x. And the only possibility for that field is the field of constants. And that's just how the original proof went. Of course, there's a lot shoved under the rug here. That's the theory on the theorem on risky geometries is not at all an easy theorem to prove. Maybe you thought it was easy to prove. For the rest of us, it's not an easy thing to prove. Okay.
You're actually looking for several
derivations. You were for several derivations? Yeah, okay. So it's true.
Strong minimal sets.
Strong minimal sets are finite differential dimension. Minimal sets are finite. Yes, there are. Okay. Now, a couple of years ago, Anatoly and Martin Spieker gave more direct proof of this dichotomy theorem in differential fields by really taking seriously higher order tangency in differential fields, okay, using these jets. But the original proof of the risky geometry theorem also involved tangency at some level, but the tangency defined combinatorially. It's defined in terms of specializations, and if you actually have algebra and geometry available to you, then it should be possible to give a proof about what happens to families of curves involving tangents and so on, actually really using tangents. And that's what Poynting Zeigler did. Right? And this proof actually gives finer information beyond just the dichotomy theorem, but finer information about the structure of these finite rank types. And part of what I'll do today is explain what's going on in that proof. So there are a number of ways that one can go about this. The main thing that you need is some way of seeing higher order tangent states inside of differential fields. And one approach, and this is the approach that was taken in the original Poynting-Zeigler theorem, is to look at jet spaces. Okay, so I'll spend some time telling you how jet spaces work. Okay, so we start with an algebraic world. Okay, so in the algebraic world, we start with an algebraic variety over some fields. We can talk about the jet space at a point. Maybe before I talk about the jet space, we should just talk about the tangent space. What is the tangent space at a point? Okay, so one way you can think about it is you can think about directed tangent lines. Now, if you want to formalize that inside of algebra, you can think about a tangent direction as being an element in the dual space to the cotangent space. So, I don't know. Sometimes you call it cotangent, and it's very easy to see that's what it's supposed to be. That's the tangent that deals with cotangent. But to know an element of the cotangent space is to know a function up to first order. So to know what it does at the point, so if you know that it actually vanishes at the point, and then you know what it is modulo and squared. So what we're going to look at now is we're going to look at it up to order, a higher order. Okay. Now, that's a perfectly fine space in itself. Okay. The trouble is that, well, there's some problems with using that functor. For one thing, it goes the wrong way. It's a contravariant function. Contravariant functions just ruin everything. So it's dual, and it becomes a much nicer functor. Right. So if you take the dual to this higher order cotangent space, so look at functions at a point that vanish at a point, modulo those functions vanish at a higher order. The dual of that is what I'll define to be the jet space. The nth jet space of x at the point A. Okay? So it's just a vector space right now. Okay. And the note here again is that this is a generalization of tangent space. Okay? This is back the way that you're going to define the tangent space for algebraic varieties in general. Now, as Rahim was saying earlier today, the way that this is defined makes a lot of sense if you can get your hands on the sheaf of functions on X and the maximal ideals and you do all the kinds of algebra, but it doesn't, on the face of it, look like a definable object. Right? Something which really lives in the algebraic closed field. But it does. Okay? And this jet-based construction has a number of very nice properties. The first one is that it really is given definably. Right? So to each algebraic variety, there's a corresponding, well, I call it a bundle, it's not really a bundle in the technical sense, but there's a space over it, which we call J of X, so that the fibers of this map, they naturally identified with the jet space as defined in terms of the duals. Right, so that you can really see the jet space variety at a point as being a definable group, uniformly, in the parameters for the point. The next property, which is very nice, is that this construction actually is a contravariant functor, which again is a useful property. And the third property is this separation of points property. Did I say contravariant? I did say contravariant. I didn't mean covariant. Okay, I'm erasing that right now. Okay, this is something I can't do. I'd have to go back to axiom X and recheck everything. It's a covariant functor. I don't know why it's contravariant. I think they're so worried about contravariant functors. But okay. It's a covariant functor. So it's a very nice functor. It's a contravariant. I guess it's actually, yeah, that is what it is, actually. Right? I mean, because you define it first as the contravariant functor, and then you do the contravariant.
No. The other one is not contravariant.
Oh, the space functors. It's not a big deal. Okay, I mean covariant. That's a covariant function. But one of the nicest properties of jet space is that it separates points. That is that if you have two irreducible subvarieties of an ambient variety, which meets in some common points, then those two varieties are the same, just in case their jets are all the same. Now here I can regard, see, if I have x included in z, then the jet space of x includes the jet space of z. And likewise, the jet space of y includes the jet space of z. So it makes sense to ask, are these two vector spaces the same? Okay. And what is this really saying? It's basically saying that you can tell two, let's say just the functions, you can tell two functions apart just if they, well, two functions are the same if they all have the same derivatives, or the prior derivatives at a point. Okay, so I skipped a little proof here, just now I'll go to the proof. It's not very hard. Okay. If these guys aren't the same, x is not equal to y, then the sum function in one of the ideals is different than the other. Okay, so say in x, but not in y. No, it's in x, not in y. Okay. Well, since f is not an ideal of y, eventually it's not in a maximally, some power of the maximal ideal of y then, because this is Noetherian. Well, then there's some element of the dual to y, which makes this person go to one, say, but there's nobody in the dual for x, which is anything but zero. They all have to go to zero. Right, so you can tell them apart. Okay, so let's start with the jet space construction. Now there are other ways you can look at the higher order derivatives, and I'm going to go through one other way. I could spend given all my time talking about various ways that you can go about this. Another way of looking at it is the algebraic arcs instead of algebraic jets. Okay. All right, so maybe first let's do some calculations before we define anything. Right, so the main idea of the arc spaces is that using just some kind of variety over the field, you can see what the variety looks like over, say, the power series ring or some truncated versions of the power series ring. And how do you do that? You do that by interpreting, say, an element of, say, one of these truncated power series rings, one of these versions of the dual numbers, as a tuple of elements in the field, just by adding up, looking at the coefficients of the powers of epsilon. Okay? So you choose a basis for this ring over k, and then you can write any element of this ring in terms of tuple of elements in k. Okay? That's so far so good. Okay? Now, if you have some system of equations over this ring, I can think about them as a system of equations involving this way of decomposing the elements of that ring. Okay? So that's how I do it. Okay, so I start with, it's actually important that I use a scheme here, which is not a variety, this doesn't appear. It's not reduced. And a sequence of polynomials, which defines some variety over this ring. I want to now think about it as a variety over k. So I want a variety over k so that the points in k correspond to, in this natural correspondence, to the points in this non-reduced string. So how do you do it? Well, you just take the variables that go into each of these polynomials, and you extend them in the way we did before. So I have a new sequence of variables. So before I had, say, t variables, and now I'll have t times n plus 1 variables, okay, indexed in this way. And then just expand each of these polynomials in terms of the basis. And doing so, you'll get a sequence of polynomials now over k, over the field. And it's just involving, but now it has not that more variables. And so if you take the variety defined by that sequence of polynomials, plugging in k points, the same via this correspondence is looking at points over this other field, over this other variable. Okay, so this is an instance of what's called the Bay trace construction. Okay, so this is where arc spaces come from. Arc spaces come from, say if I start with a variety, x, over a field k, I can think of it, if you like, just taking the same equations which define the variety, let's make a scheme over some bigger ring. You can just do that. You can think about x. If you don't like this kind of notation, ignore it. But If I turned it out with X, I thought of it as a variety. Now I have to think about it as being able to find it. I've done nothing. I'm just same equations. Just take exactly the same equations. And then do that substitution of variables business. And you get a new variety over K. So that its K points correspond to the K of epsilon modulus on the epsilon points. That's the arc space of the arc scheme. Okay. So I just had to put this, although I was told I shouldn't say it, but I have to do it. Okay. I think the right way to think of the arc space is that it represents a functor. Okay. So it represents a functor. Do you have an objection?
No.
So, a couple of years ago when we first started thinking about these things, we knew about a whole series of different things that were called jet spaces. And we thought they're all the same. This made a lot of the proofs much easier. Right? But they're not the same. And they have very, very different properties. So that's why I insist upon using different names. These are arcs, and ones are jets.
Yeah.
Okay. And when Breen gets here tomorrow, he's going to talk about different things he calls jets, which, again, are different. They just aren't the same.
Only before lunch, we have them now.
What?
We have to be
Gordon Dixon
before.
Yeah, Gordon Dixon, but I mean, so Bleem is going to talk about P-jets tomorrow.
Oh, Bleem.
Yeah. So.
But you're going to say something about the relations between these three that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
The Wahim thing is the same as what we saw first.
Well, you think the ring is
except the G.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's
the top of the
G.
What's the G?
Well, it's a bit, yeah, it looks like one of the peckles out of all right. What about the fact that this is happening in X squared, and this is happening in not exactly in X squared?
Well,
it's
the Christian bundle.
Okay. Hey, one of them you're taking the idea of the diagonal and taking modulo that idea of the diagonal. Here's the idea of the point, it's going to be over X, and still. Yeah, but it still seems like.
I think there are some more things that have it, but they're not quite the same thing.
So the only other difference is that you're cutting it off before the zero stage.
Right, yeah, it's only for the zero stage.
Yeah.
Just,
Those are two things.
Okay. Alright, so I feel like. And I think this is a better way to think about it. But if you like, you can think about the arc spaces as just representing the certain point. If you don't say anything more about that. Well, actually, I will, but they're not now. Right? Now, I can find the arc spaces, just see the fibers of these arc bundles. Right? So, just by, from the thinking about what these, I do want to think about what they represent. Okay, so, what is the point in arc space? Points from the arc space over K corresponds to some points in X that's in the figure of X. And so if you have a map of these rings, that's going to correspond to a natural transformation of the arc space functors. Okay. So there's a map from the higher arc spaces to the lower arc spaces. And if you think about what happens when n equals 0, well, this is just the ring itself, this K itself. So the 0th arc space is just X. Nothing funny happens. So we define the arc space, the nth arc space. You're right, I do mean n plus 1. horrible happens. Right, so that corresponds to the natural transformation. I don't know that corresponds to. It corresponds to the natural transformation from a l minus 1 to a n minus 1. Yeah. Okay. Right, so I think it's here. Okay, so. Well, the nth arc space is supposed to be with n plus 1. Okay. But the 0th arc space is just x itself. Nothing coming happens. So we define the arc space over a point just to be the fiber over that point. Okay. So if you're thinking now in terms of the rings, what is the... So you have some points A moving in x. know, it's given by two covalents from some field. So the nth arc space above X, of X above A, is just all those things inside of the ring, R epsilon modulo epsilon to the n plus 1, that specialize down to A. And then satisfy the equations for X up above. Okay, so that's what it is. Now, what kind of properties does this arc space have? One annoyance, and this is, again, it's a serious annoyance that we pretended didn't exist when we first thought about this, is that these aren't usually groups. Okay, so the jet spaces are groups. They're defined to be groups. But the arc spaces are not. The first arc space is. Okay, the first arc space is a tangent space. In fact, the first jet space is a tangent space, the first arc space is a tangent space. Basically, any of these constructions that you do, the first one should be a tangent space. If it's not, then you've done something wrong. And somehow the one of the guiding principles. But in general, the arc spaces are not groups. They can be decomposed in terms of groups, but they're not groups themselves. And so the sense in which they can be decomposed in terms of groups, that if you take, well, I'll just say, to make life easy myself, if you take a smooth point, then each successive fiber of this, so you can think about the alpha first arc space as living over the alpha arc space. Each of those fibers is isomorphic to the tangent space of the variety of the point. But, and this identification is functorial, I didn't say a functor of what, exactly. And you have to choose a functor of this x and a tilde. So you need the point also. If you don't have the point, it's not natural. Okay. So it can be decomposed in terms of groups, not exactly groups themselves. No, it's just still useful, but it's not exactly this one. And when I say functorial, what I mean by this is that if you have a map between varieties, of course that induces maps between the tangent spaces, the differential of the map. Okay. And the map between varieties, it induces maps between workspaces. And the identification between the fiber of part of the arc space with the tangent space respects the differential. I mean add varieties. Okay. And by saying it's functorial, it's just what I just said. Okay, so that's, if you look at the arc space, the AO of the map corresponds to the differential of the map. It's what? VF. So VF sub A, mapping the tangent space and the tangent space. So I mean differential, don't I? And that's called a differential. I think that's called a differential. Okay. Right, since I call it the differential. Okay. Now, arc spaces also have this nice property that they determine the variety. And I'm going to give a proof of this, which is almost certainly the wrong proof in general. But here it's the right proof. So I'm going to give it. The proof that I'm going to give only works in characteristic zero, although we think that it works in I think this is true in characteristic P also. It's just, I'm only going to say it in characteristic zero. Alright, so that's true. It's when you have two irreducible subvarieties of an ambient variety meeting at some point, and they're the same, just in case they have the same arcs at that point. And so again, it's enough just to look at the higher order arcs. Okay? All right, so let's go through the proof. Okay, so the first observation is that I defined arcs these infinite spaces because they're definable. Okay, but really, we should have thought about the infinite arc space, the inverse limit of all these things, which is looking at the points, so what would the inverse limit of taking all the arcs look like? It would look like the points in the ring of the Lorentz power series over K, those points in the power series ring, would specialize to A. Right? And to say that all of the arc spaces are the same, the finite ones are the same, is to say that the infinite ones are the same also. Okay? So the set of points in the power series ring, the set of power series points in X is specialized to A, the same as those in Y specialized to A. Okay? All right, so now, as before, if X and Y are not the same, And there's some function in the ideal of one of them, which is not an add-on. And this time we decided to take it in y. And x, okay? So there's some function which vanishes in y that doesn't vanish on x. Yes?
Well, you need some kind of coverness condition of x and y inside C. So C and x are the affine line, and y is the affine line minus 1 point.
That's not a variety. I mean, it's a community varieties or closed varieties.
By the way, doesn't that respond to point A to be smooth on Z on the ambient variety? Even to make a tangent space to do a bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, you're right. That's not important.
What?
That's not important. It'll be smooth on. It'll be on smooth on some ambient variety. It doesn't have to be on that one. And so the reason is okay. So the reduction. This is a local problem. So if I want, I can assume that the Z is the affine space. What? I mean, well, okay, so again, it depends what the variety is, but if x and y were different, then there would be difference on some big affine piece. So.
Do you really need that x and y are closed inside?
Yeah, I do need that. Yeah. Yeah. And definitely something that x and y are closed. That's what I mean by variety. I mean, varieties are always closed. Those other things aren't varieties. They're constructible things.
Can
I
find
any close? In what?
Sub-varieties.
Sub-varieties, yeah. Yeah, the sub-varieties. Close-up. Yeah. All right. Okay, so if you like, okay, so Z is the affine space. I hope that's
fine. I'm not sure why that's the kind of generality. I'm like, you do some smooth or
actually. Why would any different smooth?
Well, why is affine space?
Well, I mean, so if x and y are different, then they're different on a big affine open.
Affine space.
What?
Oh, is that a contained in the AL?
Yeah, Z.
Well, it's really equal.
Okay. Well, okay, Z is contained in AL.
Oh, I
see. Then I only ask them whether x and y are equal. And so if the closest varieties of Z, the closest varieties of, yeah, if anything that Z is close to. Now, maybe I should swap Z out of the picture. Z isn't really, you know, Z isn't an important part of the statement.
Yeah,
it's not about the definition.
So the definition doesn't depend on Z, in other words, it's
intrinsic. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Mm. Well, there's something else. Happening in embedding. Yeah. Happening in embedding between tangent spaces. Something else. Depends on what the tangent space point
to me. Embedding of what? Something else.
There's a map If I have an embedding of x into z,
yeah,
then there's an embedding of z. Okay, now that's why I want to think in terms of functors. Okay, so then the points, the R of epsilon modulus of n plus 1 points of x are subsets of the R of epsilon modulus of n plus 1 points of z. This is a set. Yeah, well, that's actually the proof. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, okay, so if you like, and so this issue about smoothness, Z is affine space. You just want to take it to be affine space. When I say sub-variety, I mean closed. Anything's closed. Okay. Now, I'm going to define an evaluative field. So, if you look at the ring, the coordinate ring of x, so this is the polynomial ring mounted by ideal of x, it has mapped back to k, the specialization, by sending the coordinate variables to the point a, which lives in x. Okay. This map extends to a place on the fraction field, on the function field of x, and this place, of course, is a corresponding evaluation. Extend evaluation to the L-straight closure. So I call the extended evaluation C tilde. Now there's a first order of statements, which I've expressed in a non-perturbed looking way, true of this value field, and that is there's an integral point in x over this value field, which specializes to the point A, and satisfies that f of b is not equal to 0. Okay? Namely, take the point x. Okay? The point coming from this x. Now, the Robinson's product elimination theorem, this value field, the elements are equivalent even after I've named parameters for k to the Fourier series fields of k. And this is also an alpha closed value field over k. So, this field satisfies the same statements. Namely, there's some points over its ring of integers, which satisfies this day and has f of b not equals to 0. So that points to what is the ring of integers? The ring of integers is just the union of the power of three rings, but for sake epsilon, so you want to take fractional powers of epsilon. Okay. Well, this is an increasing union, so if you're in here, you're in one of these rings. Okay. But the ring where I've taken a root of epsilon is isomorphic to the ring where I haven't taken any roots over k. So I actually have a point living over the power series ring, which lives in x, specializes to A, and satisfies f of b not equal to 0. Well, that's a contradiction to our original hypothesis. Right, so the algebraic arcs also have this nice property that they separate points. Okay, well now I want to convert the algebraic arc in jet spaces to differential arc in jet spaces. And do that. So before doing this, I just need to say something about differential prolongations. These differential prolongation spaces are also sometimes called jet spaces, but I won't say that. Okay, so these aren't jet spaces. So it just starts by defining a function. Right? So basically, the function is given by taking an element of the differential field and writing the sequence of all of its derivatives up to a certain order, up to order L. Okay. That's a function. I call it an abelard of L. And I'll define the Lth prolongation space of just some subset, so some power of the differential field, to be the Drzwiski closure of its image under this map of L. Okay, that is, you take elements from the set X, and you look at X, D1X, D2X, DNX, and D1 squared X, and you have all of the different partial derivatives up to order L, and then take the Drzwiski closure of that set. Okay, so that's the prolongation space, the Lth prolongation space. And yet again, we have another case where it looks like a tangent space. If I started with X being an algebraic variety defined over the constants, then the first prolongation space is the tangent bundle. It's just comes from the same thing. Right. Now I need to say something about differential dimension. So the differential dimension function for a differential variety. So I don't know if I define this by differential variety, I just mean a set defined by a system of differential equations, differential polynomial equations. It's defined by a function from natural numbers to natural numbers. It just tells you the dimension of the Lth prolongation of the differential variety. Okay, so it's a function. Now it turns out this function is essentially a polynomial. There's a theorem of Colchin that given a differential variety, you can find a polynomial rational coefficients, which agrees with the dimension function, at least for large values of L. Now, this polynomial is not a definable invariant of X. I mean that if you changed X to some other differential variety, you had some kind of definable bijection between them, they need not have the same polynomials. But the degree of the polynomial and the leading coefficients is invariant. Okay, so they degree is called the typical dimension. Actually, it's usually called the differential type, but I'm not going to say that. It's the typical dimension. And the leading coefficient is called the delta dimension of the variety. And then there are other coefficients which I'm just going to ignore. Okay, so it's just like it's not at the top. And when the typical dimension is 0, that's basically saying that the dimension of the prolongation spaces doesn't grow as you go out farther. That's called having finite differential dimension. And the original proof of the trichotomy theorem applies to types whose his loci had finite differential dimension. Okay. So, kind of specialized to another way of thinking about differential varieties, different equations, or sets defining differential fields. And that's in terms of Alfred D varieties. Okay. So, an Alfred D variety, I don't mean for now, although you can have slight variations in definition, an algebraic variety given together with F, a section of its fifth prolongation. And so it's a function, and tam is a regular function from x back up in tangent space, or the fifth prolongation window of x. Now, I think there was work used to rationalize those. And I said also legitimately regular. Okay. Now, to an algebraic variety, is a correspondent, this can be thought of as another differential equation, if you like. You can look at the set of points whose derivative agrees with what the section is supposed to be. And this defines a nice finite dimensional, a set of finite differential dimension inside of X. And in fact, up to some fudging, every set of finite differential dimension looks like one of these sets. Okay. So these are the, you know, the prototypical finite dimensional definable sets in differentially closed fields. So now we can talk about the differential jets and arcs that correspond to these things. And so it's possible to define a jet space of one of these algebraic D varieties, or of the differential set defined by these things. And there are a couple of ways to do it. I'll mention two. Because I said there are a couple. There are actually more than a couple, but I'm only going to mention two. So the original way that was done is in terms of D modules. It sounds very scary when you call them D modules, but as soon as you... What? Okay, I won't say this one. So wait, you're going to say all these things?
Okay. Continue.
Okay. Leave early now or leave early? Or maybe I'll just point, and then you can say this. So you can look at, well, you say D module is actually really is a module of a certain ring. And ring is D, right? So it's a D module. But no, I'm serious. It just happens to be a non-commutative ring, which is annoying. It's just a ring of linear differential operators. Generated by the extremist derivation. Inside the D module is a special vector space over the constant, the horizontal space. And that's just every place where D kills elements. Everything is annihilated by D.
The other X is the N.
X equals N. Yes, X equals N. Right? And an important fact, which is very useful here, is that you can find a basis for the whole D module as the vector space over U. This is under the assumption that it's finite dimensional, look at U, inside of the horizontal space. And that's a useful fact that shows up in the later proofs. Now, one can regard the dual to a D module itself as a D module. And here's a nice formula for doing. So the way that the differential jet spaces were first defined was by regarding the jet space as a D module. Right? So this formula defines a D module action on the maximum ideal variety at a point, assuming that A lives, you know, satisfies the differential equation. Okay? So here F, the delta, just means you let the partial act on the coefficients of the polynomial. And here I mean the differential. Finds a nice D-module action, and that itself then will define a nice, it respects the filtration, so it will define a nice action on this higher cotangent space. And then by taking duals, you get a nice action on the jet space. And B, differential jet space, is just defined to be the horizontal section of that D-module. Great, so it's nicely defined, and the way it's defined, it sits nicely inside of the algebraic jet space. There are other ways, and I think I'm not going to talk about the other ways. That's how you might define it. Now, a key property of this defense of that space is that it separates points. Right? And so not only do the algebraic justice separate points, but the differential justice also separate points. So that is, you know, C is open space. Okay? That is, if one has B subvarieties, this man brings D variety. By D subvariety, I mean that this function should agree with this function, that function. That's how common, the points in common in their sharps. Then those two varieties are the same just in case all of their differential jet spaces are the same. Okay. And now the key to this was the stock I mentioned before about finding a basis in the constants, finding some basis in a small set. Now, in general, you try to define these differential depth spaces with many derivations or sets that aren't necessarily finite rank, things just go wrong. Now, you can define them. There are lots of different definitions. You can prove any properties about them, but they don't work quite the way that you'd like them to work. In fact, okay, so we don't know that they separate points the way they're supposed to. We do know that their dimensions can be very wrong in ways that ruin many important properties and proofs. The differential arc. I mean that you can have, okay, you can have a differential variety of, say, typical dimension 1, okay, whose jet space has typical dimension 2.
Okay. But
so you're doing exactly what happened with the U-rank? Yeah, right. If you open mega squares, then yeah. So it's somehow the levels where these things happen is shifted off. The equations we have in mind are linear differential equations over the constant. They have this property. Yeah. So they aren't, and so even just a second.
One derivation, everything is fine.
But one derivation, everything breaks down. Okay, that's differential arc spaces work just fine. So I said, basically, just take the same way to define arc spaces for algebraic varieties, and just repeat it for differential varieties. Okay. The key is, though, you have to regard this epsilon as being a constant. Okay, so all the, when you differentiate epsilon, you get zero. So that gives you a way to go from differential varieties over, over the differential schemes, if you like, over this ring, to differential varieties over k. So the points over k corresponds to the points over this funny ring. It's a beautiful construction, right? And we can again define the arc spaces to be the pre-images of points on X, just exactly as we defined it for algebraic varieties. The properties that this has are pretty nice. So again, these aren't exactly groups, but they analyze them in terms of groups. In which group, it's the differential tangent space. So Colchin has the notion of the differential tangent space, and you can analyze at least an A is sufficiently smooth on X, and analyze these spaces in terms of the tangent spaces. Again, if A is a smooth enough point on the intersection of a common point on two differential varieties, then those varieties are the same just in case their arc spaces are all the same. And so it separates points. And what's nice, the last fact here is a technical fact, but a useful one, that you can compute the dimension functions for these for arc spaces, and at least for general enough points on the variety, the dimension of the arc space is just n times the dimension of the variety. That's the dimension function of the variety. Okay. All right. So now we can see what these are used for. So this was the whole point of all this construction. So this is the theorem that Rahim was mentioning earlier. That's one saw first in the context of compact manifolds. And that is that you can think about the type of an element over its conical base, and then reverse it. Think about the type of the conical base over the elements. And the fact is that in a difference to the closed field, that type is internal to one of these arc spaces. And the arc space, which arc space? Well, you can take X to be now the locus of the tuple over, over the field. Okay? So there's a sort of a natural differential variety just floating around. And you can take this all in terms of this arc space. Okay? And in the arc space, in the finite rank case, I could replace arc with jets. Okay, so if you know that jets work, then you can just put jets instead of arcs. Okay, so what's the proof? It's not a hard proof. So this is actually simply a complete proof. Okay. All right. So how much time?
You're technically over.
I'm technically over. Okay. So I think that actually, I mean, this is the last full proof I was going to say. All right. So if you want to understand the type of A over C, basically you just need to know what differential equations does A satisfy over C. What's the smallest differential variety containing A over this thing? So that's the locus Y. Now the canonical base of its type is entirely given by knowing what is this variety, what is this differential variety, what's the canonical parameter for this Y. But since differential varieties are determined by the arc spaces, that canonical parameter is determined by the canonical parameters of its arc spaces out there. So it's determined by these things. So these guys are subsets, definable subsets of the arc space with respect to X. And by stability, you know that any definable sets inside this other one can be defined using parameters from that ambient set. So we can find parameters from here, which define that guy. And so that's one of the key observation which makes this work. And so I think I'll just close then by saying that we can conclude about this. If you don't know what a regular type is, you won't like this next theorem, but I'll say it. So in general, if one has a regular type in a differentially closed field, so if you like a regular type as a minimal type, okay, then either sloping logic, either the Fortean geometry is not very complicated, or the type is non-orthogonal to a type in a group, a special kind of a type of a group. So it would be the generic type of some out of the group. So it's a definable subgroup of the out of the group. So these are all defined by linear differential equations. So that your non-locally modular type is non-orthogonal to this guy. So in some sense, all of the interesting Fortean geometry in differential closed fields comes from linear differential equations. And the conjecture is that you can replace group with field, although that's just a conjecture. And so in the case of finite rank, this is what was actually proved. But instead of group here, they're fielder. All right, so I think I'll stop there. And thanks.